Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Mike Florio.
Let's bring in Mike Florio here. Joins us on the program.
NBC Sports.
All right, Florio, I know you're probably busy.
Pro Football Talk.
Starts the day, he ends the day with Pro Football Talk. He is Mike Florio.
We have learned that an unvaccinated Aaron Rodgers has tested positive for COVID. Your thoughts?
Well, you know what? He's a big fat liar. That's my first thought.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Go to hell with your big brain. Ladies and gentlemen, Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi.
How are you, Mike?
On the Score.
Mike Florio is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to AdventKnows.com to schedule your appointment. He is on the Score hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He's at Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports creator of Pro Football Talk. And man, where to start? We know the teams that are in the market for coaches and general managers. We have heard from them, and already we've moved on to the next stage of the news cycle. The question I have for you, Mike, how fast? Are we talking about another 24 hours, another 48 hours before hirings begin to be announced? What is the gestation period for action?
If I recall last year correctly, and there's a good chance I don't, it took about a week or so before the hires began, and then it becomes a very rapid dominoes begin to fall process. The NFL has been encouraging teams to take time to be deliberate, and for some teams you have the added complication of hiring a general manager, and the Bears are one of those teams, obviously, and even though they want to hire the general manager first, they're interviewing coaches before they have a general manager, which don't get me started, but I think that's a complicating factor as well. Vikings, Bears, Giants, looking for general manager first, then ideally first, then head coach. That slows it down unless they decide to go coach first and GM second.
Right, and we're seeing that concurrent process happening with the Bears, for example. What are your thoughts on just their hiring process? I do want to get you started because I respect your opinion. And then also just the list of names that we've seen so far, because it is vast and pretty impressive.
Well, it's vast and impressive, but you have to wonder, do they already have an idea of where this plane is going to land and how much of it is? And there's a value in bringing in as many different people as you can, getting different perspectives, picking brains. But I'm troubled by the fact that Ted Phillips, who will be removed from football operations supposedly once this hire of a GM is made, is involved in hiring the GM. And this gets back to something I've said for a long time now. Ted Phillips has basically morphed into a quasi-owner where they're not going to fire him. They're going to find something for him to do. He's going to have influence, but what has he brought the Bears since he's been the president of the team starting in 1999, three playoff victories in 20-plus years, and he and Bill Polian are the two people who seem to be the most responsible for the hiring of a head coach. And I'm not a fan. I said this yesterday morning on the same station. I'm not a fan of bringing in any outside consultant who barnstorms, takes a paycheck, and eventually hooks you up with one of his friends, cronies, the son of a friend or crony, definitely not one of his enemies. You're limiting your universe of hires if you are delegating the ultimate final say as a practical matter to Bill Polian. And frankly, when you prop up Bill Polian, when you announce to the world, well, we brought him in here, we highly respect him, he's a Hall of Famer, he's hired Marv Levy, he's hired Tony Dungy, Are you going to reject Bill Polian's final recommendation, whatever it may be? Probably not. And then he's gone. That's the one thing I'd love to see somebody put together, and I haven't done it because I'm too lazy and I'm not sufficiently interested in it to do it. But when we have these consultants, Bill Polian, Charlie Cassidy, Ron Wolf, Ernie Accorsi, you know, it's lather, rinse, repeat. What's their track record for their recommended hires? How have they done? I have a feeling if they've done well, we would have heard about it from them. I just don't like the idea of somebody who has no ongoing accountability, no skin in the game beyond cashing that check and moving forward, telling you who to hire. If you can't figure out on your own who to hire based upon your network of connections, your knowledge of the game, your experience studying the league, talking to people, being around, if you can't figure it out, it's time to sell the team, I think.
Sometimes the football world harmonizes with itself in ways that are satisfying. As it's doing right now, with you talking about Ron Wolf specifically, the news crosses that on the Bears' list now for an interview request would be Patriots front office consultant Elliot Wolf, indeed the 39-year-old son of Ron Wolf, which would fit ideally in somebody that the ghost of Bill Polian might bring in front of you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it doesn't matter who all's on the list. What matters is who Polian eventually recommends. And you're abdicating your decision making process to someone who is not part of your organization and who only has a very limited role. And this year he's consulting with the Bears. Next year, which competitor of the Bears is he going to consult with? I just don't like it. I want my decisions made by people who are all in with this organization, who are employed by and or who own the team. I want those to be the people making the decisions, not basically throwing their hands in the air and admitting, as a practical matter, we don't know what the hell to do. Let's hire somebody else to tell us what to do.
Well, or then trying to tell you that, like you said, Ted Phillips isn't involved when he is involved. And the other people on that committee, albeit impressive, I think at the end of the day still report to Ted. So that's an issue to me as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And then Ted is going to focus on getting the stadium built and have nothing to do with football. Of course, that may just be what they're telling us because ownership realized this thing was moving toward critical mass and at some point they were going to have to fire Ted or truly cut him out of the football operation altogether. I just don't know how Phillips goes from having complete and total authority over the general manager to having nothing whatsoever, especially if he's going to hire the general manager. Surely George McCaskey and Ted Phillips are going to be talking about the GM and how the GM is doing and where the GM needs to improve, and that expertise that Ted has built up over 20-plus years is going to come into play until he's gone. I'm not looking to come up with a list of, oh, this person needs to be fired and this person needs to be fired, but if you're firing the coach and the GM, and then in a few years, you fire the coach and the GM. And then in a few years, you fire the coach and the GM. At some point, the person who is hiring these people needs to be accountable for this revolving door. And at some point, 20 years, I don't know, that's a fair statute of limitations. After 20 years, at some point, the person who's making these hires needs to be accountable.
Absolutely. And accountability was not one of the many corporate buzzwords that we heard in that press conference. It gave us zero confidence in the process, but also told some really uncomfortable truths when I know you heard it too, the question about Olin Krutz and whether or not he had gotten a $15 an hour job offer. And I saw that that was one of the first things that Pro Football Talk reported from that press conference. What did you think of all of that?
Well, I think you find a way to take the high road and not get yourself into a fight with Olin Krutz. And, you know, maybe when the question comes up at the press conference, George McCaskey says, we got far bigger problems right now. We got far bigger challenges right now than getting into a back and forth with Olin Krutz over something that really doesn't matter when it comes to what we're trying to do, which is turn this team around and win football games. Wouldn't that be a better response than throwing it back at Krutz and continuing the entire exchange? Now, the best outcome is to not put one of your former players in a position where he thinks he was offered a $15 an hour job. But I think that so much of success and failure of a team comes down to how key people in the organization handle the media in key moments. And obviously what happened on Monday leaves a lot to be desired.
To what extent is the Bears' definitions and Bears' job titles malleable in a negotiation? if they found the person that they want to run their football side, could it happen, as it has happened in other sports negotiations before, where that person said, you know what, that's great, you want to hire me? I got a couple offers here. You're going to make me president of football operations on the same standing on the masthead as Ted Phillips. Regardless of who's reporting to whom, you're giving me that title or I'm taking a different job. Has that happened? Does that happen? And I know that in some sports and some industries, title inflation gets to be pretty common. We saw it happen for a while in baseball. Could that happen in a Bears negotiation?
Well, I'd like to think it could happen, because why else would you be interviewing Brian Flores when you don't have a general manager? If there isn't a possibility that you are sufficiently blown away by Brian Flores that you decide to modify your structure and put the coach in charge of everything and let the coach hire the general manager that will help him set the table. Otherwise, if you're committed to hiring the GM first, it makes no sense whatsoever to waste your time interviewing a coach that your next GM may not want to hire. What's the point? They should be, if unless they do have flexibility in this process, their only objective for now should be hiring a general manager as quickly as they can, get the right person as quickly as they can with all deliberate speed, and then let that person hire the coach. So with Flores, hey, if they think they got another Belichick here who in his second act can be trusted with personnel authority, and if they understand how things went sideways between Brian Flores and Stephen Ross, and I just think that's an inherently dysfunctional situation in Miami. They never should have fired him. Two straight winning seasons for the first time in a generation. Swept the Patriots this year, 4-2 against Bill Belichick in three seasons. What the hell is Stephen Ross thinking? So maybe they interview Flores and they think, this guy's really got the goods. He can be the coach and the de facto GM. Let's just give him the keys. We could do a lot worse. We've done a lot worse.
You mentioned the second time around. I think of the Jets when it comes to trying not to judge so much of what somebody has done in their career. Todd Bowles comes to mind, being with that organization. And then I realize the Bears' record isn't exactly sparkling in the last 15 years either. Is this a job that is as attractive as it seems to those of us who are not here?
Well, it should be attractive from the standpoint of the city, the fan base, the history. It should be attractive. It really does all depend upon whether or not you're going to be allowed to do your job, how much of Ted Phillips really is going to be hovering over you as you run the team. Are you going to be micromanaged by George McCaskey? If you get the support financially to go out and get the players you need, and you're given a chance to really, you know, plant the seeds and let them grow, then I think it's got the potential. But every one of these jobs, except for the Raiders, because that job opened up for reasons unrelated to wins and losses. The six other jobs that are open because the teams aren't good. So there's already some baked-in dysfunction that you're going to have to deal with if you take these jobs, but it should be an attractive job. First step is, how attractive is it to the GM? Do you get the right GM? And then for the coach that the GM wants to hire, how attractive is that? But, you know, it's something where you want to take your time and do it right, but if you twiddle your thumbs, you're going to lose out on potentially good candidates. And it's a very stressful and pressure-packed time. And, you know, fans have to just sit back and hope that the people who are charged with making the decisions make a good decision so we aren't doing this again 2 or 3 years from now.
Considering everything that you are saying about the inherent weakness of hiring a consultant, of especially one of these retired big names that parachutes in and parachutes out, the Chicago Tribune reported today that Polian's involvement with the Bears began at an unspecified time in season, and that we now know after the fact that the very decisions to fire these guys in the first place were informed by the advice of the ghost of Bill Polian. And I think that's really damn weird. And especially hearing from Matt Nagy all year of this great relationship and collaboration and how well everybody works together, to know that the great and powerful Oz was hiding behind the curtain at some point, helping pull some of these strings, that's kind of messed up. And I'm wondering what it means after the fact, what it says about, and what questions anybody now wanting to take this job should be asking about for whom they're working.
I think we've finally found Mark Conkle's source. Maybe it was Bill Polian. I mean, I'm only being partially facetious, but, you know, the fact that Polian had his spoon in the stew from the middle of the season on, does that make it more plausible or less plausible that they had a plan that they ultimately aborted to move on from Matt Nagy after the Thanksgiving game? It makes it, in my mind, more plausible that was the plan. And again, dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things, and it would be the height of dysfunction to come up with a tentative plan to fire Nagy during the season and then back off because it got out publicly and let it become public. I mean, it's one dysfunction on top of another, but that just feeds into the idea that, hey, they've already abdicated responsibility to Polian. Tell us what to do. We let these guys trade our first-round pick next year to move up and get Justin Fields. We let them do that, but we're not going to give them a chance to fully develop Justin Fields. We're going to go ahead and turn everything upside down. Please tell us what to do. If I was a Bears fan, I'd be alarmed by where this potentially could go. I want my team to be owned by a group that is capable of making decisions like that without someone telling them what to do.
It is unstable. Who do you think is the best head coaching candidate right now? Maybe either, and I'll include Harbaugh in this, either in the NFL ranks or perhaps if they're waiting in the wings in college. And who do you think is also one of the strongest general manager candidates?
Well, as to coach, look, it depends upon what you're really looking for, what kind of roster you have, what your objectives are. Jim Harbaugh is a guy you could do a lot worse than 44-19-1. And he's a guy who went into San Francisco a decade ago and immediately turned the team around. They went from 6-10 to the brink of the Super Bowl his first year, to the Super Bowl and the brink of a championship his second year. But it fell apart quickly because what a shock. Good coach is also kind of a jerk. And I think it's incumbent on a properly functioning organization when it gets a good coach who also is kind of a jerk, because it kind of goes hand in hand. I think Tony Dungy's the only successful coach who isn't also kind of a jerk. But you have to have an element of that to hold people accountable and to get people to strive to reach the highest levels of performance and commitment and desire, et cetera. If you could get Harbaugh, and I think he's trying to make a power play to get more money out of Michigan after he cut his salary in half last year because he wasn't getting it done. Now he's getting it done and he's got options. But Harbaugh makes a lot of sense. Flores makes a lot of sense. I think from his perspective, though, I'd want to be very careful about jumping into another situation, because I think you get two shots as an NFL head coach at the most. Joe Judge didn't get a second shot, but Brian Flores did enough that he gets a second shot. Maybe you want to wait a year or two and pick a better spot, pick the best spot, have a chance to really think it through. But I like both of those guys, Harbaugh and Flores. And from a GM standpoint, here's what astounds me, and I need to write about this. I spoke about it today on PFT Live. Why is it that every time a team is looking for a general manager, it is a laundry list of guys who have never been general managers before, and including guys that the casual fan looks at and says, who the hell is that? Oh, that guy's a candidate. Who is it? Oh, this guy's a candidate. Who is it? Why is it that we see coaches who have been successful and ultimately get fired get second chances, but general managers who have been successful and ultimately get fired just kind of disappear? They just kind of go away. It's weird to me. Thomas Dimitroff would be at the top of the list. Like, why isn't he the first name that any of these teams, I mean, his first order of business, 2008, he drafted Matt Ryan. He's still the quarterback of the Falcons 14 years later. They went to a Super Bowl, 28-3, but he put together a pretty damn good team. It's just odd to me, and I'm not saying he should get a job. I'm just saying that somebody who has proven they can do the job, whether it's him, whether it's Rick Spielman, you know, Scott Pioli's floating around out there. It's just odd to me that people who have had success in that job don't even get mentioned. I don't understand it. And maybe they pose a threat to the Ted Phillipses of the world. I don't know. And that theory is out there, that the team presidents don't want a GM with experience because that person may have the leverage and the ability to take away influence. But if I was a Bears fan, that's what I'd be saying. Why don't we have some people on this list who have been there and done that and done it at a high level?
Meanwhile, it's wild card weekend. What interests you most in these upcoming games?
Everything. But the one that stands out for me, and I remember this very well in 2005 when the Steelers were left for dead after losing to the Bengals, and it was over. It was done. The Bears actually went to Heinz Field the following Sunday on a snowy day in December, and the Steelers won that game, and they started to piece it together when everyone had expected it was over. Their offensive line was horrendous that year. They stole a spot at the end of the season as a sixth seed, and they got hot. And Mike Tomlin yesterday talking about falling asleep during the Chargers-Raiders game that ultimately determined that the Steelers would have a spot, and if it had been a tie, the Steelers wouldn't have even been in. There was a looseness and a relaxation to Tomlin that really has me thinking, you know, it's Ben Roethlisberger's last ride. Nobody believes the Steelers should even be there. They're horrible away from Heinz Field, even though they went to Baltimore and won, and they just got blown out a few weeks back by the Chiefs. I am fascinated by the possibility that the Steelers are going to go in there loose, nothing to lose, catch the Chiefs flat-footed, close game, blocked punt, crazy out. You know, the things we've seen, things that defy all objectivity and common sense. I can't wait to see that game on Sunday night because I get a weird feeling the Steelers are going to they're going to catch the Chiefs with an early uppercut and turn it into a game.
I hear an 11-year-old Mike Florio in there, and I love it.
I was never a Steelers fan. I was a Vikings fan growing up.
Okay.
And this is the anniversary of the day that and I grew up in Steelers country.
Right, because that's pure Steelers around territory. Okay.
I've been here 50 years in and around Pittsburgh following the NFL. The game that got me interested in the NFL was the Immaculate Reception game. And even and you know, my life would have been a hell of a lot better growing up if I'd have been a Steelers fan. But I know the mindset. And every time this year I pulled that card, hey, they're playing the Ravens, they're supposed to lose. I think they're going to win. They won. Hey, they're playing the Titans, they're supposed to lose. I think they're going to win. They won. I'm starting to feel it come. It's floating around in the ether. Steelers over the Chiefs on Sunday night. Wouldn't that be something?
I like it. I like the confidence and, frankly, the energy pick. Seems like a good idea.
And I'm not just saying it because the game's on NBC, although the game is on NBC. Please tune in for Sunday night. It won't be a blowout. I guarantee it.
Chiefs are playing awfully, like, they are playing better, though, at the right time.
I love the fact we have no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl. I really do. This is the first year in a long time where we can look and say, maybe this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. It's a rare treat.
Well, look at the Packers. Hey, if the 49ers or the Buccaneers go to Lambeau Field, I could easily see the Packers being done. Easily.
Wow.
So, wow. It's going to be a fun postseason. Home field advantage is basically dead and gone, even with fans present. Who knows what's going to happen, and that's the way the NFL likes it.
Mike, thank you, sir. We'll talk next week.
Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Florio. Another football expert weighs in next. Mike Lombardi had some strong, structural, meaningful stuff about the Bears search, about what you have to have and how you have to talk about it. We'll hear from him next on The Score.
Frustrated Bears may be thinking, what makes him think he's going to get it right this time? We're confident that with the experience we've gained and with the makeup of our search team, we will find a general manager and a head coach who will lead our Bears to the success that all Bears fans deserve.
Okay.
You might be confident. I am not.
He's not even confident. He said he was just a fan. He hired somebody else to do the job and then said the other person's also going to do the job, but then he's going to do the job later.
And then, a great job by Dan Wiederer in the Tribune today. He's like, when did you hire Bill Polian to help?
I don't remember. I don't know. It was a thing. He was here and he helped with stuff.
When?
I don't know.
Who doesn't think that Matt Nagy was supposed to be hired, or fired rather, in the middle of the season? Who didn't think that Thanksgiving Day estimation was correct? And then they just doubled back because they had never fired anybody in the middle of a season before.
Everything changed with that report. Everything. Track it all.
Like it,
and they couldn't respond. The Bears were paralyzed. They didn't know what to do.
I think they found out we're going to fire him. Now what?
Just nothing. Just operate as you were going to previously, because that's what you should have been doing.
Until they said, George, you might want to gather the entire organization together and meet with them a day later.
Told you this is a bad idea. Reports got out that we were going to fire the coach that we ended up firing.
Oh, my God. Well, Michael Lombardi.
And say Justin Fields' name. Yeah.
please. Michael Lombardi has always been a resource when it comes to the – it always sounds like such common sense when he talks about how front offices can work. And I'd be surprised if, you know, Michael Lombardi couldn't have a nice little boutique consulting job for some of these NFL teams. If everybody else is cashing checks to hear him, he should too.
Florio asking why GMs only seem to get one chance with teams. I think of also, in that category, Michael Lombardi.
Well, Michael Lombardi was on, as he often is, with Mike Mulligan and David Haw on The Score this morning. And we get back to this idea of George McCaskey and the Bears and the constant need of outside help.
I think the hardest thing for George is really, and you know, obviously getting Bill to come in as a consultant is a good idea in theory. In reality, Bill hasn't been in the building. Bill doesn't really know what the true problems are. And to solve problems, you've got to know what they are. It isn't about what's the answers. It's about asking the right questions. And I think that's really the essence of this whole thing. And George is really showing that, you know, he's relying on outside counsel. And I think the use of his word, no one had an ego. I think he's willing to say, I don't know. But that the problem with saying you don't know, it creates a situation where your organization doesn't really have the culture and the principles needed moving forward. I mean, I would have rather had George come to the press conference and say, look, I really appreciate Ryan Pace. I appreciate Matt Nagy. They were wonderful humans. They did this. But we need this. The Chicago Bears need this type of person who can do this, who can do that, as opposed to saying, look, we're going to throw the grass up in the air and decide whether we need to hit a 6-iron or an 8-iron.
I wonder if they even know what they need.
I don't even think they understand why they won and why they lost. I think that's the essence of the problem. And I think, you know, Coach Walsh used to say all the time is we have to scout inside out. We have to know who we are to find the players that fit what we do. And the Bears need to find out who they are. And this isn't really a hard challenge. It really applies to most walks of life, right? Robert Caro has written 5 books in his entire life. 4 of them on Lyndon Johnson, 1 of them on Robert Moses, the man who built all the bridges and transportation systems in New York. And every day when he shows up to work, when he's working on his latest book, which will be the last book on LBJ, he reads the paragraph that he wrote before he starts writing the book to make sure that his day is spent adhering to the paragraph, what this book is about. The Bears need that paragraph. George McCaskey needs that paragraph. It's not hard. It's not complicated. It's frankly, you know, I said to an NFL head coach who's looking for to hire assistants, I said, ask them to describe their defense in 10 words or less. If you can do that, then you have a philosophy and a belief. If you can't and you ramble, then you're all over the place. And what George needs to do is sit down in his office and write down, this is what I want. He's got great, great, great history in his organization. He can go back to the 40 years of Papa Bear. He can understand what this franchise believes in and why they've won and what they stand for. And until you do that, you're never going to be getting out of the doldrums because you're randomly searching. It's a little bit like The Price is Right. You're always trying to find out, guess the price, and you're never usually right.
Well, he's clearly using The Price is Right. It's like the first game show reference. There is actual price guessing going on. There is in the true negotiations here, the Bears might be cutting bigger checks than they thought they would have to cut. They might have to concede titles that they wouldn't otherwise have conceded. I love that aspect of it, of it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And where I really don't trust the Bears, it's one thing for them independent, even if they were the only team looking, even if they have the only openings and it's just a parade in and out of Halas Hall, I wouldn't trust him. But when it's a fluid, dynamic situation where every price, every opportunity is then interdependent with what's going on elsewhere, I multiplicatively don't trust the Bears. It makes it even worse operating in that environment, because when you add up the number of moving parts, it makes their usual paralysis that much more damaging.
Yeah, they just can't handle variables.
Yes.
That's it. They couldn't handle him in a game. They can't handle him in a season. They can't handle him in a search. Adaptation and adjustment is a struggle with this team. They hire people who struggle to adapt and to adjust. safe to say that that's a concern and an Achilles heel.
I hate having to root for a team to be lucky, but that's the truth.
Oh, you don't get born into ownership without being a little lucky.
They've already been very lucky in that regard.
Now, how about Lombardi's comment about McCaskey not understanding why the Bears failed or why they're losing, as well as what we heard from Florio today? You're getting a guy in Bill Polian to come in who's not attached to the organization. This is not somebody who's employed by the building or has history with the Bears. He's going to do his job and leave.
What job is he expected to do, though, is the other question.
Sure.
I think that changes every day, depending on when he started, which we don't know, and they won't say.
You know what the why is?
What?
Your vision. At least according to PJ Fleck.
That's the people.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Didn't he block Herb on Twitter?
Yeah.
So did Pat Fitzgerald. Do you think that we should have
that's a fantastic combo to be blocked by.
Do you think that we should have a subset of Bears interview candidates who have blocked Herb on Twitter?
Herb should do some of the interviews if we really wanted to get at it.
Herb would be fantastic at doing the interviews. I also envision this. All job interview processes to me are just like what happened with Dwight in The Office. If you don't get that reference, it's a tremendous episode where Dwight just brings in all of his friends and his former babysitter and his cousin Moe's. And that's the kind of interview process I want to be in. That's the one that is the best to me. But even then, at least Dwight knew all of the personnel pretty implicitly. Can't say the same here.
I'm terrified that the Bill Polian influence is already being set up to protect, deflect, and after the fact blame. And
you could argue that it was already set up in the way they addressed the quarterback.
It may already have been. It felt that way, didn't it? And the truth about Bill Polian, he's just a guy with a football thought. He's not some football god. He's not some untouchable, immutable oracle. This is the guy who in the draft class and
he was the beneficiary of the quarterback class of 83, number one.
Sure. But the quarterback class of most recent vintage that minted us Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes and Mitchell Trubisky, his favorite guy, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Bill Polian stand on the table for Chad Kelly from Ole Miss, Jim Kelly's nephew, who had a bunch of off-the-field problems? Wasn't he, wouldn't they find him sleeping in somebody's living room? I mean, this is, and is he out of football now? Like, that was his guy.
In 2017, Bill Polian says Chad Kelly is the most talented quarterback on the Denver Broncos roster.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, for the draft, he said he's the most talented. He
most
didn't
talented.
Say he was his favorite. He said he was the most talented.
The but most talented. More talented than Patrick Mahomes.
I'm just saying there's a little bit of a
there
change.
There is, but that almost makes it worse to say he was more talented.
The NFL has a huge nepotism problem. Huge. This isn't helping. And who also said that Lamar Jackson should have been a receiver. We talked about that. And then the way that George McCaskey addressed Justin Fields, the quarterback who you invested in, your organization gave up important draft capital. Wouldn't a first-round pick be so pivotal right now given the Bears' record and who would be making it? You invested in him that much and you can't address it in a way that is professional enough to acknowledge he's on your team. You mean to tell me that's not the influence of Bill Polian?
And here we are already looking at the names of sons of old friends, and that shouldn't surprise anybody.
Dable has a family connection.
That's right, doesn't he? When the next person in here can somehow backtrack it to a favor to a somebody, and then Bill Polian gets to leave. There's no consequences for pick. None.
By the way, how many Super Bowls did Jim Kelly win?
None. Yeah, he built some really good teams. The game was
that
different
lost
then.
To the Cowboys.
He built some teams that were really, really good. 100 years ago, it's a different business now.
I don't think there's anything magical about a so-called football czar.
No, you wouldn't. Because you don't know how useful they can be.
And you like Ted. And Ted isn't going to want to hire somebody who threatens him, who could possibly be viewed as more powerful within the organization, no matter to whom anyone reports.
I mean, that's it. When we were thinking about this, it's I love the fact that other people are involved. And it's great that Tanisha Wade and Lamar Campbell are involved. But don't they ultimately still report to Ted Phillips, who is still their boss? So how much are any of us going to push back on our bosses like that?
That and then when George says ultimately, no matter what, he said we're going to try to reach consensus, but it's my call, my decision. Okay, great. It sounds like the more you hide behind him, it's Bill Polian's decision because you can't have it both ways. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a list for you. I was going to do it yesterday. And if you were listening yesterday, you already have the lead to the story, but there's a lot more to it.
There is. And we both picked the same story yesterday because we also both wore matching black turtlenecks. This scares me as much as anybody. So let's just lean in.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Started out talking Bears. There's a list of names. Every time you look up, every time you glance at your Twitter feed, there's more names that become official for the Bears interview process. But
Moe's, Gabor, Dwight's babysitter. Wait, those aren't the ones.
I wouldn't mind. Like I say, interview everybody.
Creed. I'm just going to name office characters and see if anybody notices.
We talked to Mike Florio. We heard again from Mike Lombardi as well and talked about the Bulls' historic win last night.
Okay. This story had me at meth-rito. But it's truly yours, Dan.
No, it just... That was the one when I glanced down the list that... I was going to quiz you as to at which airport did TSA confiscate the breakfast burrito full of meth.
I suggested it was Tampa. I was wrong.
Good guess.
But good guess, right? Right?
The answer was Hobby International in Houston.
Uh-huh. It's adjacent to that East Texas.
This isn't quite as much fun as the other end-of-year list we did that came from emergency rooms for things that were removed from various human orifices in emergency rooms.
Also a planet in our solar system.
Yes, that one too, and not Neptune. But here were what are ranked as the top 10 TSA catches of 2021, the most unusual items confiscated at airport security checkpoints.
Hold on. How do they know there was meth in the burrito? How do they know it was a meth burrito?
Meth dog or something?
Meth dog.
Because otherwise, you just think it's a burrito.
That was the Nickelodeon show that never caught on. Meth dog. Meth dog.
I think after the fact, they were able to determine that there was something that was not
teeth
quite...
Teeth sold separately.
Right, about the breakfast burrito. So the joy of this is actually picturing yourself as the next person in line. You've got the gray bin. You've taken off your shoes. You've taken off your belt. You moved your laptop out of the thing. And the
if you're not on pre-check, Dan, what are you doing?
I'm not. Only my wife has pre-check. I don't travel.
I have pre-check.
Well, in our family, I'm saying. I think my daughter has it too, but I guess I don't merit it. But it's imagining the person in front of you having the following. Bullets hidden in deodorant.
Why? Just why?
Gotta get those bullets wherever you're going.
Just check them.
Atlantic City. Down the road in Newark, an antique pistol. Someone was actually bringing a pistol, antique or not.
Was it loaded?
No, the meth burrito was.
All of these things seem pretty reasonable to me, but also, why are you traveling with them?
Number seven. And I thought for sure, and even though it was the Honolulu International Airport, my guess is this person is of or from Texas.
a gun belt buckle.
Hell yeah!
That's the belt buckle that is actually a gun.
I could use one of those.
You are buckling your belt with a gun.
Hell yeah!
Yep.
Harrisburg International Airport in Pennsylvania, they confiscated a meat cleaver.
Was it Shane?
Yeah, and there may be some non-evil, benign reasons. It could be that person was going somewhere to cleave meat.
Yeah. It's not always a horror film. The better question has become, if you were to be caught with a weapon at TSA, what would it be? Shane, cleaver. Me, belt buckle weapon. Belt buckle firearm.
I was picturing something more surreptitious with like one of those like little Derringer pistols, one of those little handheld, but really way more powerful than you think it is, like the with the ankle holster kind of thing.
I don't know. This is a good question. I'm also quite uncoordinated, so calamity would for sure ensue.
Number five, bear spray from the Destin Fort Walton Beach Airport. Somebody tried to get through TSA check in Reagan, Washington with a machete.
Yes. Why? The bayonet was taken.
The Syracuse airport confiscated fireworks.
What? Why are you... But why would one check those? Why would one carry on those?
You might need them in flight. I don't know. I would think. Number two.
They're expensive.
Number two, the Sacramento International Airport found someone with a wine holder shaped like a gun.
Okay, that's excessive.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Is it a hollow gun?
Oh, I get it. So it's
gun?
like a wine. I bet it's a... So the list I have says wine bottle holder made to resemble a cluster of revolvers.
Oh,
so it's probably like fake guns all together to hold your wine.
Okay.
There's a lot of stereotypes in that discussion.
And number one, again, imagine the person with the carry-on bag in front of you in line at the New Orleans International Airport with a chainsaw.
Just why?
Nah.
Why?
Right? Like you,
Dan?
Like
no, Dan. Dan might be a bayonet of some sort.
I had to defend myself.
Oh God, musky lures. But I'm just
thinking, yeah, this musky lures 100%. What are you even talking about?
This is like the plot of a really terrible Final Destination movie.
Oh yes,
like all of these.
Yes,
like chains, like,
the gun belt buckle.
Chainsaw?
You're gonna die. Like you're just gonna. Somebody's dying there, especially with it being so close to like intestines and the like major important stuff
in
your body.
The funny thing though is that speaking from experience, when you travel on a fishing, and I can't speak for a hunting trip because I'm sure there's some of this that goes on with hunting trips to popular hunting destinations as well. But as someone who has traveled relatively regularly to Canada, flying in for fishing trips, the amount of leeway.
There's a $6 Popeyes order right now. Speaking of your bougie-ness.
One chicken strip. If there's a
Nuh-uh, it was a whole box of stuff.
Nah. When you travel into Canada, the amount of leeway that you get for things that are clearly fishing related, like if it's in your tackle box, that's just part of fishing there, eh? Like I had a 7-inch long, really nice Rapala fillet knife, and like it's in the tackle box, that's fine. Or any of these other like hook sharpeners and so many like a syringe that was used to oil a reel and all of the like, multiple pocket knives. That's just for fishing there, eh? That's fine there. Is that a fillet knife? Oh yeah, it says Rapala on it. Oh sure, yeah, can't do much damage to that there.
In Canada, you've got to like live off the land. Here, no way. Okay. 847. First of all, I would like to take this time to say what's up to my favorite security checkpoint at TSA 7, Club 7, as I like to call it. Those people are awesome. So, hi, I love you guys. 847, I work at ORD, and you wouldn't believe how many gun-shaped, I don't know another word for this, so I'm not going to say it, objects that are super awkward and jokes are confiscated weekly.
Wait, gun-shaped? Like actual gun-shaped or so happen to be enough that can resemble a gun because it's anatomically correct and might have like a 90-degree angle aspect?
If you know what we're saying, Wow, we did that's it. Something.
Well, you know that story too. That one year, George
relational
Offman.
Relational AIDS, very good. From one of our favorite texters. Thank you.
It was the very first year of our show, so it was 1999, and George Offman said, "Well, I'm leaving for such and such," and he left his bag in the hallway. So Terry and I gave our intern. Niles Township was our intern.
Was it Jason Benetti?
No, this was like our first ever intern. And we each gave him $20. Like, hey, go down to the sex shop over on Cicero. And I want you to buy, we said, the biggest, heaviest, blackest, you know, you can find. And we're putting it in George's bag. And we screwed up because I think we made it a little too heavy. Because all we wanted to have was for him to get to the checkpoint. It was TSA didn't exist. But we wanted him to get to the checkpoint and have somebody just with two hands pull this thing out of his bag. And he apparently recognized that his bag was heavier than he thought it was and found it before we could have had the moment.
Yeah.
We tried.
George Offman knew better.
He did. We tried.
We have a Twitch person chiming in. Crazy Dave, 318. I work for United. Most of the time when bags are damaged or ripped open when you get them, it's TSA doing that, not us. No way!
What?
Well, I really hope it's not my people at Checkpoint 7 because I love them. I think they're pretty great.
Hub Arcus joins us next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.